Good morning. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in. And we also, of course, as always, invite your participation via phone and email. Phone number 414-1234 in Tallahassee or the immediate environs. And it's 800-926-8809 if it's long distance from wherever you are to wherever we are, which is, of course, in Florida's capital city. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. My gosh, we don't have political candidates here this morning. I can't believe it. This place is almost like an abandoned room because it was chock-a-block with all kinds of political contenders over the past several weeks as we were kind of leading into the August 14th primary. And a quick program note, we'll also kind of be revisiting this whole thing as the political season again winds up heading into the November 6th general election. We'll keep you posted on that one. Well, this morning on Perspectives, we welcome back one of the most respected and passionate advocates in the state of Florida. We're delighted once again to have J.R. Harding, noted disability coach, inspirational speaker, and tireless voice for those who might otherwise be voiceless, here with us on Perspectives this morning to talk about the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was signed into law 22 years ago and has been changing lives for the better ever since. Welcome back, JR.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure to be here and to be part of your listening audience.
Well, let's talk about the anniversary of the ADA. Time really flies, I tell you. 22 years, it does not seem possible. What was the background on this? How did this whole thing come to be, by the way?
Well, the ADA was really a step from the civil rights of the 1960s and African-Americans and women's rights and so forth. And it was in 1968 in which the federal government passed the Architectural Barrier Removal Act that impacted federal properties so citizens could access federal buildings, post offices, courthouses, the United States Congress, and so forth. And then in 1973, you had the Rehab Act, which brought independent living, programmatic access, the Individual Education Act, and then moving on up into the Americans with Disabilities Act, which kind of lumped them all together under a single document that was anti-discriminatory and a roadmap to full inclusion and full expectation and independence for the largest minority population in this country and perhaps in the world.
You talk about the largest minority population in the country, if not the world. Some facts and figures. One in five adults living in the U.S. has some kind of a – one in five?
One in five. And in fact, it's skyrocketing if you think about the autism tsunami people talk about. How about our baby boomers who are beginning to age? And then throw in our veterans who are coming back who have made some of the greatest sacrifices of them all. And so, in fact, that number is growing exponentially. And our community and society needs to continue to evolve and to use the ADA as a roadmap for some of these community walking, living, self-sustaining environments.
Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be folks like yourself who have a mobility situation going. A lot of different kinds of conditions can fall under the ADA. And to look at folks, you think, well, they're not disabled.
Well, that's correct. And that's one of the misnomers that so many members of the disabled world suffer some stigma and some shame or somewhat embarrassment where they don't carry a red badge of courage and people doubt that they have challenges. And the ADA spells it out very clearly that you have a condition that affects one or more of your independence or that you're recognized as having one or otherwise perceived to have had challenges. And so the three categories that specify under law who's protected is written within the ADA.
That even, and full disclosure here, dealing with a medical situation in my family, my grown daughter came down with cancer, and because she is now under treatment, surgery went fine. Thank you very much, folks, and we appreciate all the outpourings of sympathy and support from y'all over the past several weeks. But now that she is undergoing chemo to be followed by radiation, because that is a situation that impinges directly on her day-to-day life and her ability to work and all of that, she falls under the ADA now.
Well, absolutely. And the ADA talks about both temporary and permanent disabilities and whether things can be treated, corrected, modified, accommodated, and so forth. And it's just really good common sense to be sensitive to the variety of challenges each and every one of us without a quadriplegia or blindness, perhaps it's mental health, maybe it's a developmental disability, that each one of these creates unique challenges.
Okay. 4141234. If you have a story, perhaps a situation regarding yourself or someone you know that has been challenged in some way, shape, or fashion and potentially could be under the provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act when it comes to their dealing with day-to-day life, you can give us a call. Again, the toll-free number is 800-926-8809 for Perspectives right here on WFSU-FM. J.R. Harding, advocate for folks with disabilities, is our guest today. Changes to the ADA, though, as we have celebrated the 22nd anniversary of the original enactment, where are we now? What is new about the ADA, JR?
Well, thank you, Tom. That's very exciting. In 2010, the president signed some changes to the ADA, which took effect March 15, 2012 of this year. Right. So the ADA now includes amusement park, recreation boating facilities, fitness centers, fishing piers, golf courses, miniature golf, swimming pools, and much, much more. None of these components of everyday life were a part of the original ADAG or the, let's say, the roadmap of provisions that are covered under Titles 2 and 3 that says no barriers or anti-discrimination issues.
Now, I recall, boy, I'm old enough to remember this, the initial enactment when the ADA itself was passed and it transitioned from, oh, we're just going to deal with rehabbing government property to make them more accessible to primarily at that point wheelchairs. That was considered the disability, as I recall. There was a – then it was extended into the private sector and began getting into business.
Right.
There was this huge outpouring of angst from a lot of folks in the private sector saying, my God, you're going to ask us to go back and put in wheelchair ramps and open up doorways and bathroom stalls and all that kind of thing. We will go bankrupt. But it didn't happen.
No, that's correct. In fact, I think any business plan or any small business owner would want to be able to have as many customers as they possibly can and not to disclude, how about mothers and baby carriages or senior citizens and walkers. All of these pieces are a part of it. And you're quite right, Tom. There was a lot of kickback because this was what they called an unfunded mandate. Well, civil rights is civil rights. Inclusion is inclusion. And what a lot of companies found, both at the national and local levels, that by embracing diversity, your bottom line is helped, your workforce is increased, and the overall morale in the workplace is benefited from this broader diversity.
Oh, you have hit on a real nice subject now when we talk about employment. How does the ADA, if in fact it does, affect the employer-employee relationship?
Well, it's a natural extension of the non-discrimination issues with the sex, gender, and race and so forth, that disability cannot exclude you from being otherwise qualified. And so it brings another component into broadening the talent pool in the communities. Now, the ADA does not require people to be hired, but it gives individuals with challenges perhaps a level playing field that was not otherwise in place in the early days. And that was from my own experience growing up in the early 80s when challenged with my disability and what was I going to do. Quite frankly, I couldn't go anywhere, Tom, because I couldn't leave my house because there was no ramps, there was no sidewalks, there was no public entrances. So really, quite frankly, why to go to college? Because what was I going to do?
Exactly. And that also led to an awful lot of, I believe, employer kick back as well. Well, here's the government telling us who we have to hire, and we need someone to get into this particular position. They've got to swing a 20-pound hammer, and they have to be able to run half a marathon. I mean, I remember some of the things that were built into job descriptions surreptitiously in order to do that exact exclusion you're talking about, because we don't want none of them people here.
Well, and a lot of those folks who have consumed the Kool-Aid, I've discovered that having some of them people is actually a benefit for their bottom line. And a lot of the accommodations and tools that folks have learned from persons with disabilities, in fact, end up benefiting the broader population quite well.
I'm thinking of things like voice recognition software, which now we have this kind of communication with our phones. Hey, Siri, you know, where's the nearest Chinese restaurant? And we actually have that interaction. Had we not had folks with disabilities to push that technology, that probably wouldn't be here now.
Well, and that's a fair argument to make. And not only is Siri a part of the mainstream now, but many physicians, lawyers, and all kinds of professionals have been borrowing our tools and technologies to make their life more simple.
We want to really get into a lot more discussion about the ramifications of the Americans with Disabilities Act when it comes to folks that you know. And the only way we can get that kind of input is for you to get on the phone at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, and let us know what kind of experience you have that would be relevant to this discussion of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, according to some facts and figures, only 21% of taxpayers with disabilities have incomes over $40,000. Might there be some lingering discrimination there? Or the fact that as of June of last year, nearly 14.5% of the entire U.S. disability population is unemployed. That's in contrast to the national average unemployment rate of 9.4%. So we'd like to get your input on this as we continue our discussion about the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, 22 years young this year, right here on Perspective. Stick around. Disabilities could strike anyone, really, and many times they are not apparent at all. But luckily, here in this country, there is a piece of legislation that has been helping folks with disabilities for nearly a quarter of a century. And that's kind of what we're talking about here on Perspectives this morning. We actually have someone on the line and an old friend of ours. Hi, George. How you doing?
Good morning, Tom. It's good to talk to you again, and I hope everything goes well with your daughter.
Thank you.
I also wanted to thank Mr. Harding for being an advocate for us as disabled people. As you probably know, Tom, I am a visually impaired total person who uses a dog guide and who in the last 5 months has the I4S, which is the Siri, and, you know, which is fun sometimes and sometimes cannot be. And I'm also in the process of learning how to work with the JAWS program. And, these kinds of things, especially in the last few years, have been out there to help people like myself. And certainly people such as Mr. Harding should be commended for helping us and being an advocate out there for us. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that think about wanting to do something for the disabled. And, you know, they need to do more than think about it. They need to actually get in there and do it because there is going to be, as he said, a big demand for it.
Let me ask you, Georgia, while we got you on the line, what else do you think needs to be done? What would make life better for you right now that is doable, that is immediately possible?
You know, I would like to see, I know the city of Tallahassee has a very good bus system. I would like to see, like, a nice train system. I'm a model train person. I have N-gauge railroad. I built one in my life. And I used to love to ride the train. And it seems like the only transportation out of here is the bus. And, it's nice to get on the train and, sit and relax and have a Coke, have a sandwich or something. And, that's one thing that I would like to see.
Boy, that's something I think that a lot of folks are working on here as far as even the local congressional delegation, I believe, George, I'd heard, was on that. City and County Commission. In fact, all of the local governments along the CSX route from Escambia County all the way over to Duval County, where it would, kind of terminate with the north-south line of CSX and provide Amtrak connection there. They're kind of working on that. But again, it's money, JR.
Well, it's all about values, and our elected officials who choose to execute those values in a manner that is competing. You have health care, you have education, you have transportation, as Georgia just mentioned, you have employment, you have housing, recreation, community leisure activities. All of these pieces are part of our value structure. And we're starting to run out of money here in America. Well, we are out of money. And then that kind of leads back into the sustaining community and how do we include persons with disabilities in the solutions of generating money, in the solutions of being competitive, contributing members of our community, no matter what our abilities are. I'd like to kind of drop back to George's comment about her eye-seeing dog and her new technology and so forth. And that's one of the misconceptions that while there's some neat gee-whiz stuff that is making life better, my personal vehicle is a gee-whiz Star Trek Enterprise kind of vehicle, but things break. And you have to occasionally go back to the old-fashioned methodologies of using an eye-seeing dog or perhaps the public transportation in Star Metro or your friend, neighbor, or church to ensure that you are able to get around, that you're able to meet your needs even when your normal independent tools fall apart. It's kind of like get the plan with the hurricane pieces. You always need backup, whether you have a disability or not. Life is not fair, and every day you get a new sunshine or a new rainy day, and you must persist.
Oh, great philosophy here. Can we patent that somehow? While we're talking about sustainable communities, JR, that's a great point because a huge part of this particular city, Tallahassee, is in the process of kind of reinventing itself now with what's going on Gaines Street, Cascades Park, certainly, the Midtown development, all of that. Is there more of a chance to maybe get it right while we're working on that stuff rather than plowing ahead and then going, oh, we forgot about this?
Well, I that's a perfect comment. And I think the city and the county and some of our planners and developers are starting to drink our Kool-Aid of being recognizing that inclusion activities, your ramps, your sidewalks, your bus stops, your public entrances, your commercial facilities, your housing, it's all interconnected. And by meeting the needs of persons with disabilities and seniors, you've met the needs of the broader population by default.
Disability coach and advocate J.R. Harding, our guest on Perspectives this morning. You can join the conversation, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address this morning. Back to this employment thing, because this is such a big deal, the average income of folks with disabilities being significantly below that of the population in general, the unemployment rate higher, all this kind of thing. Is some something being done on both the state and even national level to kind of help this situation along, JR?
Well, thank you, Tom. The answer is yes. The governor has his Jobs Commission on Disabilities that just released its report last week. And the National Governors Association just picked up the charge of employment in persons with disabilities. And they're all beginning to recognize, well, without us, we're not going to be able to get to the state and the community levels up to the par where we need it to be. Now, we can't just rely on a shrinking middle class to support everybody else.
Okay. I can even hear some employers, though, going, oh, but you – I've read the ADA, and you've got a phrase in there that is called reasonable accommodation. And how reasonable is that? Am I going to have to redo my entire workplace to make it accessible to someone who has a wheelchair or someone with a visual impairment or that sort of thing? Am I going to have to go bankrupt?
The answer is no. The research that we have now collected over the past 22 years shows, demonstrates that the average reasonable cost is less than $500, which also allows them to write it into their tax earned in credits and so forth. So, in fact, it's kind of a checks and balance issue.
And I think you've got some reasonable accommodation done even in some lingering problems within the public sector around here, didn't you?
Well, I did, but I'm not here to champion some of my specific issues. But I think Southwood and our downtown community, FSU, and even some of our places of commercial operations all relate to our independence and our community living.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Rhonda is online, too, on Perspectives. Hi, Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I'm on there now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you might want to turn down your radio just a little bit here. I can hear myself coming back at me.
Knew that was coming. Yes. My question was kind of twofold in a comment. I question whether I am disabled now. I had never considered myself that way, but when I was trying to fill out a job application, it said I would have to be able to pull or push 50 pounds and lift 30 pounds. Now, I've had back problems in the past, and I'm cautious, and I have found recently, on the recent last few years, that I figured out that when I do mess with my back, I can have a two-day pretty debilitating migraine. And as a result of that, those things are definitely connected. And I'd never considered myself disabled, but apparently that's a possibility because I now have this thing on there that I'm not sure I could do a job that in all other ways I could do.
Okay. What about that, JR?
Well, I think Rhonda raises an issue of aging, that we all age and our bodies change and some of both our physical and intellectual capacities change with our aging. Now, what she's also raising is some employers are recruiting someone for some specific functions, right, which may need to require heavy lifting. Like in my case, I'm not going to be doing any heavy lifting. Well, maybe in Rhonda's case, heavy lifting would not be appropriate. But within that industry, are there other areas that you are interested in that you are good at and then you could then otherwise qualified to perform those tasks with some kind of reasonable accommodation?
Has there been any evidence or studies done, JR, about maybe tweaking some of these job descriptions, not in a nasty way, but again, to say, well, gee, we need, young, vibrant, able-bodied people on our workforce, even if maybe some of these jobs don't actually require this? Again, just sort of as a pre-screening device.
Well, I'm not an HR expert, but you have seen in the HR world, the commitment to hiring folks who are perhaps more seasoned, have a lot longer life skills, the hiring of veterans with disabilities. And then, of course, we always need to bring in our young folks. And I don't know about you, Tom, but the other night I was watching Family Feud, and they asked, when was the first time you had a job? Well, for me, it was 12 years old, mowing lawns and delivering newspapers. You know, and each one of those little, let's say, segues in life serve as a transition point as you continue to evolve.
Back to the phones we go. Mary Ann here in Tallahassee. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, how are you today?
Hey, we're doing real well. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having this show. It's great. I'm a visually impaired, legally blind teacher with Leon County Schools. And I want to put a plug in for the Division of Blind Services and the Lighthouse for the Blind. They have kept me on the job for a number of years now. My biggest issue or thing I would like to see improved in Tallahassee is Star Metro. More bus stops, more buses. Also, you were talking about how we are reinventing ourselves with Cascade Park. I live near there, and my bus stop gets being moved farther and farther away. I walk 15 minutes with a cane to get to my bus stop, which is right next to Appalachia Park, where I live in Myers Park. So I hope they consider that before this is all done and put the bus stops closer.
Oh, thanks for your input on that, Mary Ann. Did you go to any of the meetings when Star Metro was going through that kind of transition from where they were to where they is right now to give any of your input on this?
I haven't gone to meetings, but I talked to them on the phone. They're great people over there that are really responsive and helpful.
Okay, because I knew that they were kind of using that dial-a-ride as a way to help folks who were in specific situations like yours maybe to get to the nearest bus stop in a better fashion than having to, you know, haul yourself with visual impairment and all over a long distance to try to get there.
The problem for me with dial-a-ride is my schedule is tight, and sometimes dial-a-ride, to accommodate a lot of people with different issues, they're not dependable. I don't mean to say that. It takes a longer time to get someplace.
Sure.
So for me, walking that 15 minutes and getting on Star Metro gets me there. I have to start class at a certain time, so if I'm a little late because of something that's happened, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good when teachers are tardy.
No, but students love that.
Yeah.
That's so great for the teacher.
I remember that. JR.
Well, first, I appreciate the caller's reference to transportation. It's one of the barriers for persons with disabilities, as well as some of our seniors who lose their driver's license, and the need for more capacity for your adapted population to be mobile. Because without mobility, you have absolutely no independence. And as she was saying, that she needs to be on time. She needs to model appropriate behavior for her students. And she also raised Blind Services and the Lighthouse for the Blind. And then there's Vocational Rehab Agency for Persons with Disabilities, Ability First, all different types of human service venues in our community whose job it is to help you uniquely overcome your challenges to be as independent as possible and as self-sufficient as possible.
Another fact that I found just incredible here, unlike most Americans, folks with disabilities have no tax-advantaged vehicles to save for future expenses and face barriers to asset accumulation that ties access to public benefits like supplemental security income, health care, housing assistance to eligibility requirements that prohibit savings. In other words, kind of enforced poverty, if you will.
Well, you said that well, Tom, and that is one of the national public policy challenges we have. And that cite and that reference has to do with Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and so forth. And when Social Security was introduced in the 1930s, disability meant we had to take care of you. Well, in order to retain some of your medical benefits and so forth, there is an asset limit. And then if you're earning monies, there's also an asset limit to be able to balance all of those pieces. So you're quite right that many individuals, both young and old, are working but are artificially required not to achieve their highest level possible and are unable to save for retirement when they perhaps may need additional dollars. So they are caught in a poverty, indigent disposition?
Well, obviously something for policymakers to mull over and try to come up with some kind of solution. But what ideas do you have? So, yeah, we have accountability, and we're not throwing a whole bunch of taxpayer-subsidized services at people who have seven-figure incomes. But by the same token, we're allowing folks to get ahead in a reasonable way. How do we do that?
Right. Well, when you ask most common sense folks, let's just remove some of these artificial barriers. You know, since we're already taking care of nearly 70% of the disabled population, taking care of them with housing, medical, social security checks, and so forth, well, let's just go forth and say, go earn some money. We don't lose, right? We're already taking care of you. So if you're earning more money, you're healthier. You're not in the hospital. You're not going to the emergency rooms. You're generating a paycheck. Then you're turning around and spending that money just like anybody else. It could be quite simple.
I'm hearing you say that we really don't need a whole bunch of new government programs to make all this stuff work and make it work better. Is that right?
In my humble opinion, that would be correct. We could have a lot of education, a lot of training, a lot of little sensitivity things so the world could understand the plight, the struggle, and the capacity and the ability for each of us to contribute.
But we just build this in naturally to our environment as we move forward instead of having a 44-step staircase which is the only access way to a building. We maybe just kind of change the design a little bit.
Right. Call it universal access, not only with housing, transportation, and recreation, but universal futures.
We'll talk about that in just a moment here on Perspective. Stick around. One person you got to meet before you bid the world goodbye is a fellow by the name of J.R. Harding. He's just absolutely remarkable individual and is a tireless advocate for folks with disabilities. And if you don't meet him, he will probably come and meet you. He's just that kind of guy. He's our guest on Perspectives today, talking about the 22nd anniversary of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and what it has meant to folks not only with disabilities, but anyone who deals with people who have disabilities, which is essentially, if you look at the numbers, all of us. You said something about universal access and there's something called universal house, which is now in the news. What's that all about, J.R.?
Well, in the newspaper, in partnership with AARP and the Aging and Adult Services, one of our local developers is building what they call a home house for the ages, or living there from birth to death, that all of our needs change over time. So there's an opening tomorrow at 4:30 over off of Miccosukee in one of our neighborhoods for a universal design home where anyone can go through the front door. Anyone can get to the bathroom. Anyone can get to any of the bedrooms. Anyone can get to the light switches, that the barriers in a traditional home have been removed.
Oh, and this costs obviously, you know, two or three times what a normal house of the same square footage would set you back, right?
No. Actually, new construction, employing and utilizing the principles we have learned from the Americans with Disabilities Act, is less than 1% additional cost in any new construction project related to ADA or universal principles.
And because this works into the changing demographics that we have, even here in Tallahassee, which suddenly there is now a major campaign to try to bring more retirees to Leon County and the surrounding area. This is going to become an even bigger deal going forward, right?
Absolutely. It's a relatively new concept within the broader discussion. And this is the first time we're doing it here in Tallahassee. And the builder and the community partners all should be applauded for this leadership of being able to introduce a barrier-free environment. I mean, nothing is more frustrating than getting an invitation for a holiday party or your six-year-old kid's birthday party, and you can't go to your neighbor's house.
Oh. Here's something else. You'd mentioned this while we were on break, that it would be a good idea to go back and kind of revisit what had happened, or the timeline and the development of the ADA going forward from its genesis, even back in the 70s, for crying out loud, and its most recent change, which was in 2010?
Yes, that's correct. Well, as we mentioned earlier, beginning in the civil rights, ADA and disability issues began to show up in one piece at a time. It took nearly 20 years for the first global component of the 1990 ADA. And then again, once that was passed, the community and the federal government immediately began working on the next level, because the first ADA was simply the basement, the floor. First, can you get in the building? Can you use the bathroom? Can you use the core components of a public or commercial entity, state and local government, public transportation? Right. Could you get on the bus? Well, now you can get on the bus. Now, perhaps in the future, might you have seat choices? Likewise, using advisory committees, public comments, cost analysis, clearance, it takes a lot of people and a lot of contributions to figure out how to evolve and how to take us from the basement level to the first floor to full inclusion. And that's why we now have swimming pools, saunas, bowling alleys, on and on and on, that are now required to be a part of the public domain in equal access.
And people with disabilities wanting to have a good time and, go swimming like, everybody.
Right. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't the family like going to the pool or to the beach or to be able to walk on a nature trail?
But still pushback, I understand, from at least one segment of the industry.
We did. We did have a little pushback from some of the hospitality industry, saying that access to swimming pools was going to be a financial burden. And, their argument, at least from my perspective, didn't hold a whole lot of water, because many smart builders were already incorporating these issues, because they knew swimming pools were coming since 2004. So there was no surprise. It was just people not wanting to embrace their diversity, not wanting to change their business model, not wanting to be more inclusive.
And as a fellow by the name of Chris Thompson, who's the head honcho with Visit Florida, the state's tourism marketing corporation, was telling the Economic Club of Florida the other day, 2011 saw somewhere in the neighborhood of, about 85, 86 million people coming to Florida, the largest group of visitors, or the fastest growing group of visitors, being international or overseas visitors. And out of that 85 million, I wonder how many folks there might be with disabilities, or how many more people might come with disabilities if the state were more welcoming when it came to these kinds of things we're talking about.
Well, and that's part of transportation. How do you get from the airport to your hotel? And once you're at the hotel, do they have the right accommodations and the sensitivities to embrace the family and to be able to host the unique needs? Related to your travel numbers, in 2009, 15.9 million people with disabilities flew on Delta Airlines alone.
This was an inspiring story. I don't know if you met this guy. He came to Tallahassee, I think, J.R., about 3 years ago, and stayed with a local family that he had met online. He's from the former Soviet province of Belarus. And his name's Alexei. A young guy. He's in his 20s. And his mission in life is to build and operate an orphanage for orphan kids, of whom there are still a whole bunch in that country. And he is a quad amputee.
Yes.
No arms,
right,
no legs.
Right. As a result of a battle zone war community where he was a victim. And despite his hardships now All he wants to do is look after other disadvantaged and give them the same chance to see the world, to grow, to learn, and to contribute.
And I notice he's a heck of a skier, too. That must have been quite a sight to see, because the family took him out to Colorado and, you know, put him on skis, and away he went. It was incredible.
Right. And that's part of this evolution of inclusion. Why can't you go water skiing, scuba diving? We have Sports Ability Day here in Tallahassee, where everybody with all kinds of abilities learns how to have fun again.
Okay. What do you think? We had talked to George about this before, but what do you think more needs to be done? More development of the ADA, more rules, regulations? What?
Well, in my humble opinion, I think we should incentivize the community, right? Help them go that extra mile, especially now in the last 4 years where money has been tight and people have really been struggling. Why not encourage them and reward them for being more diverse, right? Another piece of it for me would be start with our seniors and our disabled populations from a policy perspective, whether it's education, transportation, employment, healthcare. And if those needs are met in the policy development, your needs and other people's needs are automatically addressed.
And if there is more initiative taken on the part of the private sector, a lot of this stuff doesn't really even have to be done from a policy viewpoint. It kind of works its way in.
It takes care of itself. And I think the biggest observation of where do we need to go, Tom, you've been handling political candidates for a month now. How many of them talked about the diversity of the community in this sense, and how did this part of the population play in their plans as our elected officials? And I would say most, if not any, were able to address that.
And on that same topic, JR, talk a little about what's going on with that development there at Cascades Park, which is supposed to be open to everybody and have all kinds of multi-use purposes and that sort of thing. How's that coming along?
Well, to my knowledge, it's coming along quite well, and they've embraced many of the needs of our community. And both the county and the city leaders with Blueprint 2000 staff are really excited about addressing the needs of folks with disabilities, from additional parking, from signage of, you know, 28 acres is a big spot of land. How do you get in? How do you get out? How do they make the play area for the children with multiple, let's say, inclusion activities, so that the lady, our school teacher who just called, could bring her class down to learn about Florida with tactile issues or audio issues or surface areas that no matter what your ability are, that you're able to get on it and use it.
One of the other things we have locally here that we sometimes talk about and go out to cover is that entrepreneurial boot camp that the FSU College of Business has, part of that nationwide movement there of wounded warriors coming back, maybe don't have much in the way of wanting to get into the mainstream employment. They really kind of would like to strike out on their own, and this helps them do that. We need more of that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that's the way we begin to mainstream it. We need some successes. FSU's College of Business and their whole boot camp is a national model of great success, people coming together and people actually learning how to take their ideas, their skills, their new sense of identity to the marketplace. Not only are they doing it for the soldiers, but they're now also doing it for the caregivers and the other part of the family structure related to the disability. So I think as we no longer need these model programs, and these model programs are a part of the normal programmatic activities of universities, then we've hit a home run.
Okay. Lower level or grades of education, how are we doing there at public schools? I know, you know, they're all focused on the FCAT and the changing grading systems and all that sort of thing, but how are we doing there for kids who have some challenges?
Well, that's it. We have a challenge. Approximately 17% of individuals with disabilities have not graduated from high school. Right. So we have a long way to go. And then those individuals who do make it to college, how many of them are transitioning into the marketplace? Well, because we're looking at about 14 to 15% of those currently unemployed because they were in the marketplace. What about the 70% who aren't even in the game because they stopped and they gave up?
Now, you have been attending all kinds of different outreach initiatives and everything. And we will give a plug here for Ms. Zepp's My View in the Tallahassee Democrat, which was a terrific piece about autism and that inclusion there, too.
Right. And that gets back to our community is beginning to wake up to the various challenges that are within the community and the diversity of it. Now the question becomes, how do our policymakers, how do our business people, how do our churches, how do our recreational environments embrace this diversity so you're no longer creating special programs to ensure that this group, why not start from a universal perspective?
Yeah, and that then becomes, it gets it totally out of that whole aspect of, you know, political correctness and, well, we have to do this or someone's going to scream. It just becomes the way things are.
And that's what America stands for.
Well, I believe that's the way it used to stand for. We hope it can stand for that again. So legislatively, is there anything else in the short term or long term, even though that gets us back into the policy thing? What are we looking at there?
Well, Tom, those are great questions. Remember, we talked about the ADA serving as the floor, as the basement, and now we just had this new introduction of some new elements. Well, we have other things coming. We have enhancements in telecommunication and video, FCC rules for captioning and texting on the video monitors. We have website enhancements. We have medical diagnostic equipment. We have the outdoors, being able to go on the sand and hold your sweetheart's hand and go pick up seashells or walk through the nature trails and have the hanging moss. You know, and see the redheaded woodpecker. These are all elements that are in the pipeline to take us yet to another level of inclusion and accessibility and independence.
And as we move towards the 2012 Florida legislative session, are you looking at anything there that groups might be contemplating as far as getting, at least even getting up with lawmakers and saying, hey, have you thought about this?
Well, the community within the blindness, the hard of hearing, the mobility, the service agencies are all currently developing their plans right now to not only to provide better services, to perhaps maybe even initiate something that makes a difference. Right now, I can't give you each of their agendas, but perhaps by November, some of those agency experts or spokespersons might be able to share that information with the community.
And from the small victories department, what about that bathroom down at the Capitol?
Right. Well, where progress is being made there as well. The state of Florida is taking some corrective action because some of its properties under Title II, state and local government, shall be accessible. Well, now the state capitol and other parts of the DMS properties are going to become more accessible.
Okay. And the same as you and I were talking yesterday has happened at the Leon County Courthouse. Former Commissioner Tony Grippa even taking you kind of on the tour of the rehab facilities there. So now that's fully up to par?
Right. Well, it's really quite exciting that 10 years ago, folks with disabilities and seniors could not access the Leon County structure from all angles. Well, today there's street side parking, there's a basement entrance, there's a front entrance, and even the sheriff's office has greater sensitivity with the screening applications to get you in. So baby steps and progress.
J.R., it has been an absolute delight to have you back on the air today to bring us up to date on the changes with the ADA and how really it is something – it's not just for them. It's for us. It's for everybody.
Right. Just ask the mom or the dad pushing the baby stroller.
And at one point, because of advancing years, all of us are going to come under this sooner or later. So be forewarned, right?
Thank you, Tom. Look forward to coming back.
Thank you. And thank you, Morgan, for coming along and helping out JR through all this. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox today. And, of course, we got Michael Fleming back there in the phones and emails. Welcome back, Mike. Join us, please, next week for another Perspectives with expert opinion and your input right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.